Hello and welcome to Blickwechsel, the VIDC podcast for a different view of the world. My name is Sibylle Straubinger and I am the Executive Director of the Vienna Institute for International Dialogue and Cooperation. Once a month, this podcast is about an internationally relevant topic. In today's episode, we are focusing on the role of music and art as acts of resistance against oppression, particularly from the perspective of queer artists. I'm excited to be joined by Tayo Alemi, artist name Authentically Plastic, electronic DJ, producer and performer from Kampala, Uganda. We will discuss their journey as an artist, their current residence here in Vienna with Kulturen in Bewegung, and their work with Anti-Mass, a series of queer-led club nights from 2018 to 2023, which provided a crucial safe space for femme and queer artists in Uganda. Uganda has become an increasingly dangerous place for the LGBTQ community. In 2023, the Ugandan parliament passed the Anti-Homosexuality Act, one of the harshest anti-LGBTQ laws in the world, criminalizing same-sex contact with punishments including life imprisonment and, in some cases, the death penalty. This law has intensified violence, discrimination, and persecution against queer people, forcing many into hiding or exile. The Constitutional Court's decision in 2024 to uphold most of this law has only deepened the repression. In this conversation, we will explore how Authentically Plastic's work, both in Uganda and now in Europe, resonates within the context of resistance. We will discuss their journey as an artist, the impact of Anti-Mass on the queer community, and the challenges facing queer activism today in Uganda and beyond. A warm welcome to Blickwechsel, Tayo. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Tayo, between 2018 and 2023, you co-created Anti-Mass, a series of femme and queer-led club nights in Kampala. Could you describe the atmosphere at these events and why they were so important for the community?
Yeah, when we started, we thought it was really important to have crowd that was queer-centric and also led by queer and femme DJs. So we started out with all-female lineup, and we thought it was interesting to have a place in which women and queers were in charge of leading the energy of the night and curating the music. So yeah, that was the intention we set out very early on. And yeah, the crowd, we wanted it to be also mixed, while mostly being queer-centric. The reasoning behind this was to kind of show that it's possible for, you know, queer and straight people to really like coexist and like to enjoy. And it was really a reflection of how our social groups were like in Kampala anyway. Yeah, that was it.
That was it. Mm. So Anti-Mass can be seen as a form of activism. And in what ways did these events challenge the repression against the queer community in Uganda?
Yeah, I think anything that is trying to reclaim space for LGBTQ people is inherently activism. Even though I see myself more as a pleasure activist, so somebody who's trying to reclaim space for queer enjoyment, the goal was really to try and create an internal space in which LGBT people would not have to worry about judgment from the society. Even though it's not possible to 100% have a safe space, we were trying to have a kind of like brave space, in that we were trying to go to have events out in the world, because before that it was mostly house parties that were happening in Kampala. So we were like, oh, I don't know, this feels like we are kind of hiding, or yeah. So being tied to those kinds of spaces led us to create Anti-Mass and to have events in more like more unconventional spaces in which we would feel like we are out in the world, but in which we felt like we could still control who comes in.
Okay, and you changed the places, different places.
Yes, yeah. It used to move from different locations. So at first it was really about safety. I think a year before the main gay bar in Kampala was raided, the main queer bar called Rum. And yeah, that was a very shocking experience for the community. And yeah, to be in this space that had been active for like 15 years plus, for it to be raided by the police and like for people to be taken to jail was completely traumatizing to the community. So my friends and I, we developed this kind of aversion to like staying in one place for long. And the presumption was that it would help us be safer by moving around and not being too known in a specific area.
So Uganda's Anti-Homosexuality Act of 2023 has intensified repression. So how has this law affected the artistic and social spaces you have built? And what does it mean for queer artists like yourself?
Yeah, it definitely has made things a lot more tricky to get together. Several friends of mine who are activists who run home LGBT shelters in Kampala have been targeted by their neighbors and like neighbors calling the police on them. So one shelter, which was really a bedrock of our community, got targeted recently, early this year. And yeah, that has created a situation of precarity for the community because these were seen as places where people could go if they were having issues with their families or issues with their neighbors. It also became a space where queer parties could continue happening. One of the results of the act has been that events like anti-mass are not really able to continue happening. It's not safe to do so. I think doing so would put our audience in danger. So the last event that we had was New Year's of 2022-2023. And since then, it feels like it has regressed. You know, queer events have regressed back to being just this house party scene. And even then, like, people are not necessarily safe in their homes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and you have moved to London, but despite the dangers, you have stayed connected with your life in Uganda. How do you and others continue to resist and support each other under such oppressing conditions?
Yeah, since the act was passed, we have had some fundraisers that we have done as Anti-Mass in collaboration with other friends in the diaspora, in the UK specifically, and we raised about £60,000, and this money was used to help 20 people to relocate. But of course, there's a limit to what we are capable of doing. I mean, we cannot relocate a whole community, you know? So for now, what we've been doing has been very reactive because like we cannot really, the long-term planning has moved underground because queer organizations cannot operate anymore in the open. So it's been very much reacting to situations as they come. And right now we are helping the shelter that I just spoke to you about. We are helping them. They are fundraising money. So we are sharing that as much as possible. And yeah, just making sure that they get the resources that they need. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In an interview, you mentioned that the name Authentically Plastic came from the idea of having to adapt different faces and layers to survive in challenging environments. So how did this name come to resonate with you, and in what ways does it capture the essence of your personal and artistic journey?
Yeah. I think the name initially, it really came to me almost subconsciously. It's not really something like I thought about, but only after using it for some time have I started to like embody it completely and to learn the significance of it. And yeah, like I said, it's really about just finding, having to have different faces to survive in different spaces, you know, whether that's, you know, like family or like work or like school, and kind of navigating Kampala. It's a kind of like code switching, like, you know, always changing like the codes, which, yeah, I mean, I guess that's not really the most healthy way to be.
No.
But it's also a means of survival. And I think now that I'm working in music, the name has also come to like signify a certain like fluidity, you know, a sound that is constantly shifting. Maybe like the sound, you could see it as having also like being two or three or four faced and constantly having this prismatic, like constantly changing quality.
Okay, yeah. Your music blends different influences from Uganda and beyond. So how do your roots in Kampala, but also the struggles, shape your sound and artistic expression?
Yeah, the music is influenced by Northern Ugandan rhythms and also this Eastern Uganda ritualistic dance called Kadoji. And yeah, the goal of these dances is usually to induce the participants into a trance-like state so that they can, the rituals are usually quite painful. So it's meant to put people in a trance so that they don't experience the pain. So in a way, I think dance music is kind of like does the same thing for queer people, because I mean, we are often in social situations that are kind of like rejecting who we are. And there's a pain that comes in that. And like through dance music, we are able to kind of reach a point of like ecstasy, I guess. And yeah, I see my playing with also these traditional forms is, I don't want to say queering them. I do think that they kind of have a queer quality about them already, but I feel like I'm kind of reclaiming that as my heritage is also part of the statement, because a lot of the time in Kampala, in Ugandan politics, they're like, they say that, queerness is an African, like this has been imported by the West. And I don't know. I do feel like acting in these towns, and it's kind of a part of a demonstration that is like also my lineage,
yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm. So you are in Vienna for the Artist in Residence program with Kulturen in Bewegung.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, what particularly inspired you about this residency, and how has the time here influenced your artistic process?
Yeah. It's been great, first of all, just to be in Vienna, and also just to have the space to, for me, space, I mean, I guess for any artist, space is so essential, you know, just to have the open space and kind of time to kind of let your mind wander and maybe be a little bit idle, because that's when like creative ideas kind of come to me, is when I have that kind of empty space. And yeah, it's been really great. And just meeting people who are working in this city, like going to different workshops of dancers and being able to be a fly on the wall on other people's practice has been really cool. And Yeah, I mean, in Uganda, there's no, there's not so much, there's not even any art support. So it's been quite inspiring to be in a place where, like, I feel like I'm supported as an artist. And yeah, obviously, Vienna kind of being this very, like, pretty, like, kind of city has been kind of, like, inspiring me a lot. And I've been creating a lot of, like, melodies in my music, which I don't normally do. But, yeah, we'll see how it turns out.
Mm-hmm. So you had a collaboration with Tobias Raschbacher.
Yes.
And how? What can you take away from this collaborating with a local artist?
Yeah, it's been great. I feel like it has definitely expanded my practice. It's expanded the way that I see my music, how my music can be presented. And the work that we created was very much kind of inspired by the wet environments of the Great Lakes region in Africa, where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And yeah, kind of trying to create these very lush environments, but doing it in a surrealist kind of way has been quite interesting. So yeah, I really love it.
Okay, so you will keep in touch with
yes,
him.
Yes, definitely. Mm.
So, and what's next for you, Artistically, and how do you envision your future projects continuing to push boundaries?
Yeah, I think that moving forward, I'm going to, first of all, I have a second album coming out in February, hopefully. And I'm also going to be doing more like research, going to move in a more like research oriented direction, having a more rigorous approach towards researching sounds from Uganda and like Congo, and those find out how those traditional sounds can speak to our contemporary moment in music. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the main thing. And yeah, just continuing to do what I've been doing. Yeah,
it sounds interesting. So we are already quite at the end of this podcast. Maybe just one final question. Is there anything European and Austrian communities can do to strengthen activism and queer communities internationally or especially in Uganda?
Yeah, I think support for grassroots queer organizations is going to be quite important. It's become more tricky to find them because a lot of them have moved underground, but they mm-hmm. are there and they are doing important work. There's organizations like HRAPF, it's spelled HRAPF in Uganda, and they normally help queer people who have been put in jail. They normally help people to get out of jail. They post bail for queer people. So they've been really helpful in these times. And another grassroots organization that I am really following right now is called Famacy, which is run, it's Famace, and it's run by my activist friend Sean Mugisha, who is this amazing trans man who runs this shelter in Uganda and has been working tirelessly with the community for the last 15 years. Yeah, those are the main ones I can think of, but yeah, there are more out there, obviously. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Well, thank you very much, Tayo, for this conversation about art and activism, about Uganda and about your experiences as artist in residence in Vienna.
Okay.
It was very interesting change of view for me. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
This was Blickwechsel, the VIDC podcast. Today with Authentically Plastic from Uganda, with a focus on the role of music and art as acts of resistance. Thanks for listening today. All the best, and hopefully until the next VIDC podcast for a different view on the world.